So over the course of this pandemic, we, as the general public, we've seen politicians get up and they give out numbers of, you know, the number of positive cases and the number of people that have died and the people in the ICU. Of course, people just admitted to the hospital, and we've been given numbers of people that have, gotten better. Like we've seen lots of numbers, but not many of us have taken the time to actually keep track of each and every number along the way and then put it into a graph and to spreadsheets so that you can see the trends and you can also start to tell a story with the numbers. Well, Ryan Ingram has been doing that. He is a biostatistician. He's been featured in McLean's and the New York Times, and he joins us now. Ryan, welcome to the Nightside.
Thanks for having me.
Let's start with what exactly, how do you define biostatistician? Like, how does when you're at a bar and having drinks and someone says, hey, Ryan, what do you do for a living? How do you explain it so they understand?
Yeah, so a biostatistician is basically someone who marries the field of science and math. So when it comes to COVID-19, it's being able to look at the science behind COVID-19, but also to be able to understand and to translate the mathematics of it. So when you get mathematical numbers involving COVID-19, it's to be able to relate that to the science of it.
Now, I've seen your graphs, and they're like really hardcore and extremely detailed. The ones I've seen you do that you do predominantly for the province of Ontario, have you been doing the entire country or just Ontario?
Yeah, so I have been doing the whole entire country. I've actually been producing something called the reproductive value. And it's one of those statistics that, it's not very publicized here in North America, but in Europe, it's the go-to statistic.
And what does it mean, the reproductive value? What does that mean?
Yes, what the reproductive value is, it's how many secondary infections are linked to one primary infection. In other words, if you have one person with COVID-19 and they infect one person, then the R value would be one. If that person infects one person, the R value would be one. So you can imagine that if the reproductive value was one, we would see the cases basically plateau. Now, what you want is when you see cases high, you want cases to decline. So what you want is you want a reproductive value under one. So that's what I'm tracking for every single province in Canada and then also some major cities as well.
So is anywhere in Canada under one right now?
In fact, a lot of Canada is actually under one right now, I think, because a lot of places have taken drastic lockdown measures. You got Quebec, for instance, is at 0.85. Montreal is at 0.89. Really, most places right now that are very, very large are actually under one when it comes to a reproductive value.
So I know you were tracking as well. I saw in your graph, it's like a mathematical figure of in each region, how many people you would have to see or interact with to have a 50% chance of catching COVID-19. Can you explain that?
Yes, that's actually a really interesting statistic, because at least here in Ontario, what we get is we get information about when somebody who tested positive for COVID-19 had their symptoms. We also know when that for every one person that we actually catch with COVID-19, there is typically three more people who we don't catch with COVID-19. We know that for doing blood studies and looking at antibodies that we miss roughly, once again, three of every four cases. So knowing the fact that that we're able to track when an individual has a transmissible case of COVID-19 and knowing how many we actually miss, you can figure out exactly how many individuals actually have COVID in a given area, diagnosed or not, and actually have transmissible cases. And then you can work that out to encountering and then figure out how many people you would have to encounter to have a 50% chance of actually seeing someone with COVID-19.
So give me an example of an area in Canada where the number is really low. Like you would only have to see, maybe a handful of people. Like what would be an example of a place where the COVID problem is so big that it's a small number of people you would have to see to have a 50% chance?
Yeah. So for instance, when you look at a place like North Bay. Now they have 5 weekly cases per 100,000 people. And right now you would have to encounter 6,732 people in order to have a 50% chance of encountering someone with COVID-19. So those are very, very high odds, 6,700 people, and still only a 50% chance of actually running into someone with COVID-19.
Yeah, which in a city like North Bay, which is about 50,000, you probably couldn't run into 6,700 people in a day or maybe even in a week. What's an example of the opposite of that, Ryan?
Yeah, so the opposite of that, if you saw, for instance, like Toronto, it's one in 85. That's, you know, sort of the like prime right now. But if we think back to at the height of the epidemic, if we've got like Peel region here in Ontario, which is right outside of Lake Toronto. And there's some areas within Peel that it was 13. You only had to encounter 13 people in order to have a 50% chance of running into someone with an active transmissible case of COVID-19, 13.
Yeah. So you can see the numbers tell you a story where, yeah, you need a lockdown, and you can see the numbers where a city like North Bay would be like, why are we locking down? After you've been looking at these numbers for such a long period of time, because there's sort of a strength in numbers, what are you seeing that stands out to you as maybe something that is obvious to you because you've seen all these numbers, but maybe is being missed by others?
Yeah, I think one thing which is being missed is the cases from sporadic community transmission. So that's actually one case which we don't really publicize too much. And that's basically looking at how well our tracing is actually doing. So when we say sporadic community transmission, it's basically, are we able to track down how someone got COVID-19? Are we able to track down the positive case that their positive case is actually linked to? And in some areas, if you look at like Toronto, for instance, 80% of the time, they're not able to track down where that COVID-19 case comes from. And it's a statistic like that that makes it very, very hard to stop COVID-19 if all of a sudden 80% of the cases you're finding have no primary infection that they're actually linked back to. It becomes really tough to be able to link like areas, workforces, schools, whatever else it is to COVID-19.
Which would lead me to my final question, because I know a lot of moms and dads, Ryan, they worry about the schools. When you look at these stats, is there anything that you've seen mathematically that leads you to have an opinion pro or con to kids in schools?
Yeah, so I think one thing which I've seen worldwide, there's been a lot of studies, you know, in over the 200 plus countries worldwide, looking at what they've done and then looking at what their response has had. So one thing that they found is that if you move schools online, you have a drastic effect on reducing the reproductive value. It's about the same effect as if you stop gatherings of more than like 10 people. So those two things, they actually had the biggest effect of bringing down numbers, was moving schools online and also stopping gatherings of more than 10.
Fascinating. Well, you're going to keep looking at these numbers, and we may check in with you again. I like looking at it from different angles, and I like some of the different values you're showing, because, again, I think it gives people a bigger picture of what's going on. Ryan Imgren, appreciate you being with us tonight, Ryan.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Have a great weekend.